Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, November 11th. Analyst says ban won't lower gas prices. Energy experts say blocking oil exports could damage U.S. economy security. The story was written by Miller McEwen. With gasoline prices at levels not seen since 2014 and households facing a surge in the cost of heating their homes this winter, the government is looking for ways to lower energy costs. Wednesday, a group of 11 senators wrote President Biden asking him to consider, quote, all tools available at your disposal, unquote, to lower gasoline prices, including an oil export ban and a release from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. The news immediately drew consternation from the nation's oil and gas producers. Quote, we are glad that members of Congress are finally recognizing the impacts of anti-energy policies, but short-term strategies like depleting the SPR or banning crude exports will likely not yield the benefits Americans deserve, Ben Shepard, president of the Permian Basin Petroleum Association, told the Reporter Telegram by email. What Americans deserve, quote, is a lasting, committed, pro-energy, pro-consumer set of policies that unleash American innovation and production, which will return investment into the sector and affordability for Americans, he continued. Furthermore, with energy prices spiking for allies in Europe, this policy could also force our allies into the arms of unfriendly nations and could damage our own national security, end quote. The 11 senators seem to agree, writing Biden, they share his concerns that the decision by the Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries, OPEC, and others to purposefully manipulate gas prices by constraining supply, as well as the choice of domestic leaseholders and producers to continue to export U.S. petroleum, threaten to send already record prices even higher. The senators, all Democrats, noted in their letter that the national average price for a gallon of gasoline has risen more than $1 per gallon since last November. While they support U.S. efforts to develop clean and renewable energy over the long term, quote, we must ensure that Americans are able to afford to fill up their cars at the pump in the meantime, they wrote. The high gas prices place an undue burden on families and small businesses trying to make ends meet, they added. Quote, halting U.S. oil exports could end up having the opposite effect when it comes to the price of crude oil, Daniel Armbruster, corporate spokesperson and community relations with AAA Texas, New Mexico, told the Reporter Telegram by email. He explained that, quote, since oil is a global commodity, if the U.S. were to stop sharing and other countries or OPEC did not pump more to fill in the gap, then the price of crude would rise. And since the cost of crude accounts for 50 to 60% of the pump price, we'd simply be raising the cost for U.S. consumers, end quote. Todd Staples, president of the Texas Oil and Gas Association, told the Reporter Telegram by email, quote, accessing global markets has been a huge catalyst in creating jobs and investment that have benefited every single Texan. The solution to higher energy prices is not to disrupt trade opportunities that have been a driver to more economic gains for our state and nation. We need policies that encourage homegrown energy, not discourage it, end quote. The American Petroleum Institute's Senior Vice President of Policy, Economics, and Regulatory Affairs, Frank Maciarola, told the Reporter Telegram by email, quote, Lifting the export ban has been a real driver in enhancing our energy security and economic strength while ensuring access to affordable, reliable energy. We should not step back from the progress this has provided in strengthening U.S. energy leadership around the world. Pfluger says, Trump, leader of GOP. Congressman touts ex-president's impact at campaign kickoff. The story was written by Caitlin Randall. When asked about it on Wednesday during a re-election kickoff event, U.S. Representative August Pfluger said he, quote, absolutely, unquote, believes former President Donald Trump is the leader of the Republican Party. Pfluger announced on Wednesday at the Bush Convention Center that he would be seeking re-election in 2022 for his seat as the House Republican for District 11. A day earlier, Trump endorsed Pfluger for the second time after the two had a meeting in Florida. Quote, when you look at the policies Trump put forward in 4 years, what he did in 4 years, it took us 30 years to get a president who, when he talked about border security, was serious about it, Pfluger said. He added that Trump was able to negotiate a trade deal with China and NATO and pass tax cuts and job acts. Quote, I absolutely think that he's the leader of the GOP because of the policies that he put forward for 4 years and we most desperately need, Pfluger said. Earlier in his remarks, Pfluger said that he met with Trump on Tuesday and spoke with him over the phone earlier in the week. The San Angelo Republican was elected in 2020 after 10 candidates vied for the seat vacated by Republican Mike Conaway of Midland. Pfluger previously served in the U.S. Air Force and made national security the main platform of his campaign. Quote, during my first year in Congress, I've led the fight against the Biden administration's war on oil and gas, Pfluger said Wednesday. He also said he fought against Democrats' quote, religion called the Green New Deal, end quote. Pfluger was introduced by his wife, Camille, Midland County Sheriff David Kreiner, and Midland Mayor Patrick Payton. During his comments, Payton said Pfluger was, quote, maybe the next Speaker of the House, and said the congressman is representing Midland's energy interests in Washington, D.C. Quote, what we don't need is any more symbolic sophistry in the spoiled, rotten, and elite in D.C. and the left and right coasts, Payton said. And that's why we need to have someone like August Pfluger who speaks the truth, end quote. Also in attendance on Wednesday was Kevin Sparks, the Midland oil man, running for state senate. More local restaurants now offering pre-made Thanksgiving meal options. The story was written by J.C. Lewis. Don't want to cook on Thanksgiving Day? Here is the second installment of pre-made Thanksgiving Day options. Visit MRT.com for a full list in the future. Meals. Midland Meat Company will have Thanksgiving feasts available this year. Each feast includes 10 to 12 pounds smoked turkey, 2 quarts of stuffing, 2 quarts of mashed potatoes, 2 quarts of green beans, 1 quart of turkey gravy, 1 quart of cranberry sauce, dinner rolls, and reheat instructions. Feasts are $125 plus tax and will feed 6 to 8 guests. Pickup will be available on November 22nd, 23rd, 24th from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. The last day to order is November 19th. Call 432-218-7735 or email wecater@midlandmeatcompany.com. The Texas Tamale Factory is offering spicy brisket, green chili chicken, jalapeno and cream cheese, and beef chorizo, and beans tamales for pre-order. Orders will be accepted through Monday. Delivery will be November 23rd and November 24th. Tamales come in a dozen and range from $15 to $20. Order online. Richland Hills Golf Club is offering Thanksgiving dinner to go. All orders must be placed by noon on November 19th. Pickup time is 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. November 24th. The menu features a turkey feast for 10 people, $325, with a whole turkey choice of whole or sliced Brussels sprouts, mashed potatoes, turkey gravy, glazed sweet potatoes, macaroni and cheese, green beans, casserole, traditional sage dressing, cranberry sauce, dozen cedar rolls, and choice of two pies. A la carte options include prime rib whole, $350, or half, $175, turkey only, $85, and turkey breast lobe only, $65. A la carte sides feed 4 to 5 people for $15 each. That menu includes mashed potatoes, glazed sweet potatoes, green bean casserole, cranberry sauce, Brussels sprouts, mashed potatoes, traditional dressing, turkey gravy, macaroni and cheese, and 1 dozen cedar rolls. Pies from Richland are also available. To order, email John Powell to reserve a to-go order at jpowell@richlandhills.com or call 432-684-2041. Los Fabela's Restaurant and Events is offering a Thanksgiving Day special catering package. The packages are $200 to feed 10 people, $265 to feed 15 people, and $400 to feed 25 people. The packages include turkey, ham, dressing, mashed potatoes, giblet gravy, green bean casserole, dinner rolls, and a variety of Thanksgiving desserts and tea. The last day to place orders will be November 20th. A deposit of half is required when placing the order. To place orders, call 432-563-3505 or 432-770-7686. Pickup time will be Thanksgiving Day between 10 a.m. and 1 p.m. Tulse City Meat Market will have pre-orders for fresh, all-natural, never-frozen turkey, or customers can pre-order smoked turkey or just the turkey breast. Fresh turkeys are $35 to $45 each for 12 to 14 pounds. Smoked turkeys and turkey breast will be $75 for 12 to 14 pounds. The meat market will also offer full Wagyu smoked briskets for $160 for 12 to 13 pounds. Call 432-218-7514 to order. Pies. Cora's Bistro will have pecan and pumpkin pies for $27. All pies are vegan friendly. Orders must be placed before November 20th. Pickup for pies is November 25th. Texas Fudge will offer original strawberry, cherry, blueberry, turtle, coffee, and pumpkin cheesecakes for $38. Pecan pies are also available for $15. Baklava will be available for $35 for 32 pieces. To order, visit the food truck or call 432-557-4138. Orders can be picked up on Friday from 5:30 to 9 p.m. at 3500 Golf Course Road at the food truck. The Bites. Whataburger at 3206 North Midkiff Road will host a fundraiser for Seek First from 5 to 8 p.m. on Thursday. Shop exclusive wines, furs, and cigars Thursday from 5 to 8 p.m. at the Lion's Den at Alley Outdoors. A portion of the proceeds will benefit Head for the Cure. The event is $5. It will give attendees the opportunity to taste highly allocated wines, while Rodney Brown with Venge Wines will walk them through each varietal. Furs and accessories are available from Susan Lucas of Souvenirs Boutique and purchase cigars from Garth Cigar Company. Tall City Brewing Company will celebrate its 2-year anniversary of opening the brewery this weekend. Sam Watson will play from 7 to 9:30 on Friday. The brewery will be releasing the 2 degrees of separation that was aged in TX whiskey bourbon barrels for 8 months. There will also be discounts and giveaways. Basin Brunch Pop-Up will be from 10:30 a.m. to 8 p.m. on Saturday. Brunch served till 3 p.m. The event is 21 and up. Reservations are required. Visit online for more information. The Midland Downtown Farmers Market starts the winter schedule from 8 a.m. to noon on Saturday. Make charcuterie tray and custom board with the Golden Whisk and the Studio by Kids Canvas. The class will be 6:30 p.m. on November 24th at 3211 West Wadley, Suite No. 5. Sign up online. Torino's Pizza Bar will be hosting the 11th Annual Toy Drive from 8 p.m. to 2 a.m. on December 10th for High Sky, Toys for Tots, Boys and Girls Clubs of the Permian Basin, and CASA. People can bring a new unwrapped toy or a $10 donation to support. Blue Sky is now offering carryout and to-go orders at their drive-thru, call-in orders, and pick it up from the drive-thru. The Paleta Bar opened a second location Sunday at the Micro Market. Hand Cafe has announced new hours. The coffee shop will be open from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday and 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday and Sunday. Torchy's Tacos is offering a $5 bonus gift card when people purchase a $25 gift card. The $5 gift card can be redeemed now through December 28th online or at the Odessa location. Bonus cards are then valid from January 1st to March 31st. Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, November 11th. Charles F. Acock, also known as Charlie Acock, was born in Tulia, Texas on May 28, 1941, to Homer Rex and Luella Woodward Acock. He passed away peacefully on November 9th, following a lengthy illness. He is preceded in death by his parents, his brother, Robert Rex Acock, and his nephew, Russell Allen Acock. He is survived by his wife of 54 years, Margaret of Midland, his son Chris Acock and wife Sonia of Midland, his grandson Matthew Curtis Acock, a member of the United States Navy and student at the University of Colorado, and his daughter Karen Acock of Midland. A celebration of Charlie's life will be held at 2 p.m. on Saturday, November 13th at St. Luke's United Methodist Church of Midland. To attend the service virtually, please follow the link at the St. Luke's UMC Facebook page. The family suggests memorials be made to Texas Boys Ranch in Lubbock, the Texas Bar Foundation, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation, or a charity of your choice. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Edith Pruitt Kelly, age 87, passed away on November 9th at Manor Park. She was born on the 30th of March in 1934 in Dublin, Texas. She attended Stamford High School and graduated from Tarleton State University. Her young union in marriage with Don L. Pruitt gave her a large, loving family, which grew even further after Don's passing when she entered into marriage with Carlton Kelly. Edith is preceded in death by her first husband, Don L. Pruitt, her second husband, Carlton Kelly, her son, Joe Don Pruitt, sister, Vinnie Joan Mosley, and her parents, James C. and Parolee Foster. She is survived by her son, James Cal Pruitt, daughter, Vonda Jolene, and husband, Gary B. Cothran. She is also survived by several grandchildren. Graveside services will be at a later date to be determined in Hobbs, New Mexico. In lieu of flowers, we ask that you consider contributing to Manor Park or Hospice of Midland in honor of Edith Kelly. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Isidro Galindo Natividad of Midland passed away on Tuesday, November 9th. Viewing will be from 2 p.m. to 9 p.m. on Wednesday, November 10th, and from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. on Thursday, November 11th, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Funeral service will be at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel at 10 a.m. on November 12th. Interment will follow at Serenity Memorial Garden Cemetery. Isidro is survived by his wife, Elvira Natividad, children Luis Salinas, Vanessa Natividad, Pantoja, Arely Natividad, Ariana Natividad, Jose Isidro Natividad, as well as several grandchildren and great-grandchildren. He is also survived by his mother, Maria I. Natividad, his brothers Juan Natividad, Rafael Natividad, and his sisters Maria Tercero and Nancy Natividad. Isidro Natividad is preceded in death by Rafael Natividad, Guadalupe Natividad, Prieto Natividad, and Oscar Natividad. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Vance Hollis Piercy, age 31, of Midland, passed away on Saturday, November 6th, in Fort Worth, Texas. The family will receive friends on Friday, November 12th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at the branch at Nellie Pickle and Welch, 3800 North Big Spring Street in Midland. Funeral Mass will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, November 13th, at St. Anne's Catholic Church, 1906 West Texas Avenue in Midland. Vance was born on March 20th, 1990, to Donna and Van Piercy in Midland. He is survived by his parents, Donna and Vance Piercy of Midland, sister Erin, and husband Brian Hagler of Austin, his niece Emma Ann Hagler, grandparents Jan and Charlotte Piercy, grandfather Robert Bowl, uncle Pat Bowl, uncle Kirk Piercy, and several cousins. He is preceded in death by his grandmother, Arlene Connery. The family suggests memorials be donated to the following: Raymond James Charitable, 2020 West Cuthbert Avenue, Midland, Texas, 79701. Memo, Piercy Family Foundation, which will be used to fund a TCU scholarship in Vance's name. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Catherine May Beecham, age 97, of Midland, passed away on Thursday, November 4th. A memorial service will be held on Saturday, November 13th at 2 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel. She is survived by her daughter, Kathy Poley, as well as several grandchildren. Cody Allen Martindale, age 27, of Midland, passed away November 8th. The family will receive guests on Friday, November 12th, from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Greenwood Baptist Church. Funeral service will be held on Saturday, November 13th, at 9:30 a.m. at Greenwood Baptist Church. Burial will be held at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Cody is survived by his parents, Jimmy and Tanya Martindale, and his sister, Casey Martindale. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
Hello, this is Michael, and I am reading the Odessa American, published Thursday, November 11th, 2021, Veterans Day. Front page. Pfluger seeking second term in House. Trump endorsing congressman a second time. By Michael Bauer. Wasting no time, U.S. Representative August Pfluger, Republican San Angelo, announced his reelection campaign kickoff in front of supporters Wednesday afternoon at the Bush Convention Center in Midland. Representing District 11, the West Texas native is wrapping up his first year in Congress and talked about some of the biggest items that he had had to take on during the past 11 months. He says one of those things has been to educate his colleagues on what the Permian Basin, as well as the rest of District 11, does as far as the oil and gas industry, as well as agriculture. There has been an assault or a war waged on these industries, Pfluger said as he spoke to the media after speaking to his supporters. It's very important to represent this district in a way to provide affordable, reliable energy and continue to provide food and let us continue to have the quality of life that Americans are used to. Pfluger's reelection rally came shortly after receiving an endorsement from former President Donald Trump. I met with the president Tuesday night, and he loves this country, Pfluger said. He knows what Midland, Texas does. He knows what Ector County can do. He knows what San Angelo brings to the fire. I'm sorry, but President Joe Biden hasn't even acknowledged our part of the world, and last night President Trump told me, thank you for what we do right here in the Permian Basin. That means a lot, and more so than anything else. I want to advocate for the policies that he brought this country, that made this country so strong in every sector, and to have his endorsement is an incredible step towards continuing to serve this district. While Pfluger is from San Angelo, he talked about why Odessa and Midland are so important to him. This is the heart and soul of the energy industry, Pfluger said. It's not an accident making the announcement in Midland, Texas, because what we do for this country is so important, and I want to continue to be a voice, not just for the military, not just for agriculture, but for the important energy needs. Energy affects every aspect of our lives, and to be able to educate people and to stand up for Midland, Texas is very important because what we're doing is literally changing the entire world, and we want to continue onto a good path. Pfluger won the 2020 U.S. House District 11 election, defeating Democrat John Mark Hogg and Libertarian Wacy Alpha Cody, winning 79.7% of the vote. Pfluger cruised to a win in the Republican primary earlier that year, coming ahead of a crowded field of candidates that included Midland's Brandon Batch and winning 52.2% of the vote to avoid a runoff. He took over the congressional seat that was held by Republican Mike Conaway, who did not seek a term in 2020 and retired after serving eight terms. It feels great, Pfluger said of representing District 11. It's come by so fast. To represent this district, the greatest district in the entire state, it's an honor. It's an honor for my wife, and it's an honor to go and represent and be a part of this great experiment that our country, for 244 years, has done. Standing in front of the flag, it gives me chills to know that there are so many people who have sacrificed their lives, so it is a huge honor to represent this district, and I hope to continue to serve this district and do it in a way that we deserve. Pfluger has had a busy year in Congress, working on numerous pieces of legislation. In fact, I was the first freshman this year to introduce legislation, and it was about the heart and soul of the energy industry and about what the oil and gas industry does, Pfluger said. Just last week, I introduced legislation, and there were 100 colleagues that signed on in 24 hours to make sure that people are focused on what we do and why it's so important. One little fact that people don't realize is that the Permian Basin has helped lift 1 billion people out of poverty worldwide. Not only do we power our own country, but we're also lifting people out of poverty. And that is my job, to communicate and stand up to introduce legislation where needed to make sure we can continue to do that. He touched on the theme of the oil and gas industry throughout his speech Wednesday afternoon, but also said there was more work to do. It is not by accident that today I'm here in front of everyone, Pfluger said to his supporters. It's not by accident that people like Donald Trump acknowledged what people in Midland and Odessa and this district and the state of Texas do. We have a job to do. We have a very important task to do. The world needs what the district is producing, affordable, reliable energy, Pfluger said. Agriculture products that feed not only our country but the rest of the world, and a love for the military and veterans and first responders and everyone that is putting their lives at risk. That is what this district represents. The 2022 primary elections will take place on March 1st, and the general election will be on November 8th. Currently, the Democrats have a majority in the House of Representatives with 221, while the Republicans have 213. Pfluger is optimistic that will change at the end of next year. In 2022, we will take back Congress and keep Texas red, Pfluger said. Midland Mayor Patrick Payton gave the introduction. There's not a person in this room that does not need to be reminded of the need for seasoned, hardened, and humbled leadership in Congress, Payton said. Our representative carries quite a swagger in Washington, D.C. Thank a veteran today. Marine Corps veteran describes war in Iraq. Odessan served 3 tours and came home disabled. By Bob Campbell. When Ray Lopez reflects on Veterans Day and all it represents, he thinks back to his 3 tours in Iraq and the patriotism he saw demonstrated by his fellow Marines in Company 1 of the 5th Marine Division's 3rd Battalion. It was difficult, said Lopez, who mustered out of the Corps as a corporal in November 2006. It was hard and very stressful. Veterans Day is a remembrance of what has been done for this country and what we had to fight for in order to do it. The 38-year-old Kermit native and 2002 Permian High School graduate is a veteran of the legendary Second Battle of Fallujah, which was in which he was hit in the back by a 7.62-millimeter bullet from a machine gun and almost died before rehabilitating at a hospital in San Diego, California, and then returning for a 3rd 7-month tour. The battle took place from November 7th to December 23rd, 2004, and Lopez was wounded inside a house on the 5th day of the ferocious fight with the Mujahideen that saw 95 Marines killed and 560 wounded, while 3,700 to 4,000 of the enemy were slain. The heavy bullet went through Lopez's right shoulder blade, collapsed his right lung, and stopped near his heart. During his 3rd tour, Lopez fell off a 3-story building while escaping an explosion, and his close proximity to the 500-pound bombs that were being dropped and other explosions as he worked in demolitions caused a traumatic brain injury that has led to grand mal seizures. He also has constant tinnitus or ear ringing, degenerative bone disease, and arthritis in his back, shoulders, ankles, knees, and neck from the consistently strenuous nature of his duty. He has been adjudged 100% disabled by the Veterans Administration. He earned 2 Purple Hearts. However, Lopez is able to work as an injection analyst for Occidental Petroleum and support his 8 and 13-year-old daughters, Sarah and Madison. In August, the family was given a 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom house at 2101 Congress Street by Silver Leaf Homes of Odessa and the Operation Finally Home organization in New Braunfels. They'll take possession in early 2022. Asked how he has adjusted to civilian life, he said, Every day is an adjustment. I try to be ordinary and not think about those times. A lot of suicides have gone on in India, Kilo and Lima, I, K, and L companies, and in weapons company. That's what hurts. I have no idea why. Nobody talks about it before they do it, so it's hard. There was no processing out when he left the military. It was just, thank you for your service and go do what you got to do. In his communications with others with whom he served, there are few references to their combat experiences. I think back about everybody being able to laugh and joke around during those bad and worse situations, but now we just text about day-to-day stuff, he said. Getting the house was fantastic, amazing. I had never felt I'd be deserving. It was surreal to see and feel that. It has truly been a blessing. One of Lopez's most vivid memories is of September 11th, 2001, when he was a junior playing defensive end for the Panthers. He immediately enlisted as a delayed entry into the Marine Corps, stayed at Permian to get his diploma, and entered the Corps in August 2002. Seeing the videos of the hijacked American passenger planes crashing into the World Trade Center and Pentagon made me sick to my stomach, he said. I was angry. I had initially wanted to be in the military police, but I decided I didn't want to do law enforcement. I wanted to go over there and bring them the same damage that they brought us. Police warn parents of opioid abuse. A press release from the Odessa Police Department is warning parents of opioid abuse by teenagers. OPD has reportedly responded to four overdoses where one teen was found dead by an overdose of oxycodone. The pills that were recovered are fraudulent and potentially have other dangerous narcotics mixed with them. A photo with the recent batch of oxycodone or M30, what it looks like, can be seen at tinyurl.com/TUF849HC. We are still in the early stages of our recent investigation, so I won't speak on all of it, but we do know nationwide there is a problem, OPD Captain John Sykes said over the phone. The DEA has put out several studies regarding fraudulent pills in different countries, and some here that shipped in and sold. If it's not regulated by the FDA or somebody like that, anything can go into those things. OPD is asking parents to talk with their children about drugs, the dangers, and not to hesitate to contact Odessa Police Department to report suspicious activity. Police are also asking parents to contact them immediately if they have recently found similar pills to the recent batch of oxycodone or M30. We understand there's hesitancy about getting police involved when it comes to finding narcotics like this, but we want to know about it because we want to find the people who are putting it out there, Sykes said. Other information is also available at DEA.gov about the rise in counterfeit drugs. Counterfeit pills are fake medications that have different ingredients than the actual medication, the website details. They may contain no active ingredient, the wrong active ingredient, or have the right ingredient but in an incorrect quantity. Counterfeit pills may contain lethal amounts of phenytoin and methamphetamine and are extremely dangerous because they often appear identical to legitimate prescription pills, and the user is likely unaware of how lethal they can be. Landgraf kicks off town halls at OC. State Representative Brooks Landgraf, Republican Odessa, will host a town hall on November 15th in Odessa at the Salisbury Campus Center at Odessa College, a news release stated. During the event, Landgraf will reportedly provide an update on actions taken by the Texas legislature in 2021. This is the first of four town halls that Landgraf is scheduled to host in November and December, one in each of the four counties he represents. The town halls are an opportunity for folks to ask questions and get a no-nonsense update on what the Texas legislature has been up to and how it impacts our lives in the Permian Basin, Landgraf stated in the press release. Ector County Town Hall. When? 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. Monday. Where? Odessa College, Joe Zant Room in the Salisbury Campus Center, 201 West University Boulevard, Odessa. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County, 9 students, 4 staff. 25,926 total cases, 541 deaths. ECISD daily cases. Midland County, 28,335 total cases, 372 deaths. Texas, 4,264,018 total cases, 72,009 deaths. U.S. cases, 46,626,034 total confirmed and 755,201 deaths. Find out more at covidinthebasin.com. MCH daily COVID numbers. Midland Center Medical Center Hospital daily COVID inpatient numbers as of 8:30 a.m. Wednesday. 21 total COVID patients in-house. Med-surge, non-critical, 12 COVID patients. 10 unvaccinated, 1 vaccinated, 1 unknown. Critical care, 9 COVID patients, 8 on ventilator. 6 unvaccinated, 1 vaccinated, 2 unknown. Of the 8 COVID patients on ventilator, 6 unvaccinated, 2 unknown, age ranges of COVID patients 24 years old to 85 years old. Patients from outside Ector County include one from Alpine, one from Andrews, one from Big Spring, one from Eunice, New Mexico, one from Fort Stockton, one from Hermley, one from Hobbs, New Mexico, one from Hugo, Oklahoma, one from Kermit, one from Monahans. Board gets strategic plan update. An update on Ector County ISD's strategic plan was presented during the Board of Trustees workshop. The Tuesday evening meeting went into detail about growth on the measure of academic progress, or MAP, tests, graduation rates, post-secondary enrollment, and more. After an executive session, the board approved hiring Brandon Reyes as Executive Director of Operations. He was the school nutrition director. In his new position, Reyes will oversee custodial energy management, transportation, and school nutrition. He has worked as the ECISD Director of School Nutrition for the past 2 years and also has 3 years of experience as a school nutrition buyer for ECISD. As an Air Force Staff Sergeant, he earned a top award for professionalism and discipline, the board recap said. On the strategic plan, aspects covered in the presentation were personalized professional learning, district technology standardization, and the plan's 14 indicators of success. Establishing district technology standardization is one of the projects under the theme of foundational excellence. There are 3 areas of focus. Wi-Fi and internet connectivity. In April 2021, all portables were equipped with wireless access. In October 2021, nearly 3,000 access points were installed around ECISD. In November, switches will be installed for power. And by February 2022, another 3,154 access points will be installed, making ECISD classrooms ready for anytime, anywhere connectivity, the board recap said. Devices for staff. Teachers have expressed the desire for mobility in class, so each is to be outfitted with a laptop computer, docking station, an additional computer monitor, and an external keyboard and mouse. Devices for learning in the classroom. This includes a Promethean interactive flat panel and one-to-one student devices, iPads for kindergarten through second graders, and Chromebooks for 3rd through 12th graders, the recap said. Developing personalized professional learning. This is set up in several ways. Coaching that takes place in the classroom in real time with current students. Mentoring that takes place in the classroom in nearly real time away from students. Professional learning communities, PLCs, that take place shortly before or after instruction. Or independent learning, in which a teacher researches a problem of practice, implements a solution, then reflects on the experience. These are centered on issues of actual practice. By the numbers, Talent Development has now offered 113 professional learning sessions for teachers, plus another 37 for non-instructional employees, equaling more than 13,000 seats filled in professional learning sessions this year. The Talent Development Department offers professional learning opportunities for teachers, aspiring campus leaders, principals, and staff members. Coming is a TCLAS grant to provide space for 52 teacher residents over the next 3 years and 6 paraprofessionals to become certified teachers. ECISD's strategic plan features 14 measurements or indicators of success. Trustees and Superintendent Scott Murray reviewed those measurements from year one of the plan and compared them to the goals projected for the year. The indicators range from attendance to student academic growth to kindergarten readiness to graduation rates and more. The presentation included the most updated measurements, plus a look at the many ways the district is already working to improve those areas. The goal for the graduation rate was 84%, and the actual graduation rate for 2020 was 84.7%. The graduation rate in 2016 was 87.6%, 84.3% in 2017, 83.7% in 2018, 83.3% in 2019, and 84.7% in 2020. The district also started a to and through department to get students to and through post-secondary education. The goal was 50% in 2020, and ECISD is at 51%. Some of the things the department does is help students fill out college applications, empower career exploring with Naviance, FAFSA, TAFSA workshops, and college fairs, course planning, and meeting graduation requirements with Naviance, the optional flexible school day program, social and emotional learning, professional learning communities, and personalized professional learning. The completion rate is 29% for the class of 2015. Murray said it was 6.5% for the class of 2012. Ways to help are FAFSA, TAFSA renewals, stop-out interventions, healthy and streamlined communication with local colleges, and alumni access to track progress with Naviance. For school connectedness, the baseline was 59%. The goal was to increase it to 60%. The district wound up at 57%. School connectedness is the belief held by students that adults and peers in the school care about their learning as well as about them as individuals. Ways to improve this are social and emotional learning with 7 mindsets, National Board Certified Teachers, Opportunity Culture, Personalized Professional Learning, Developing Choice Schools, Blended Learning, and the Trusted Learning Environment Seal. Jesse Garcia and the Talent Development Department talked about what they support, such as personalized professional learning, talent pipelines, career pathways, and professional learning. Garcia said one way to look at that is coaching and another is mentoring. On attendance, the district is using the communication software, Kinvolved, added 4 more social workers, bringing the total to 4. Trustee Delma Avalos said it would be good to find out what the social workers have done to help the students return to the classroom. Murray noted the importance of attending school in person and said there are also acceleration plans. To qualify for virtual school, Murie said, you have to pass the STAR test or end the course exam and have good attendance. Many students were out because they were sick with COVID or exposed to it and had to quarantine. Murie said it could take 3 to 5 years for students to catch up. On a separate topic, in his opening remarks, Murie offered congratulations to Julie Marshall, principal at Dowling Elementary School, for being named the Odessa College Honors Outstanding Educator and celebrated Tuesday afternoon at the OC Honors event. In addition, Education Foundation board member and volunteer Lisa Wyman was selected as the outstanding individual through the OC Honors program. He asked board members to congratulate both of them when they see them again. Murie also mentioned CDC release of a COVID vaccine for children ages 5 to 11, and the school district is working with the Ector County Health Department to host clinics for students, the first of which was Wednesday at Zavala Elementary. November sale tax increase. The city of Odessa received its November sales tax check in the amount of $5,519,371.29. This amount includes the economic development sales tax of a quarter cent. The city of Odessa will receive $4,415,497.03, and the Odessa Development Corporation will receive $1,103,874.26. The city saw an increase in sales tax revenue with November's sales tax revenue total of $4,415,497.03, which reflects a $918,850.61 or 26.28% increase as compared to November 2020. The year-to-date total sales tax revenue for fiscal year 21-22 is up 35.85% or $2,085,427.84 as compared to the budgeted amount expected at this point in the fiscal year. In addition, the 2021-22 year-to-date amount is above the previous fiscal year-to-date amount by $1,297,414.65 or 19.64%. The city has budgeted $37,500,000 in net sales tax revenues for the current fiscal year. Sales tax revenue is generated by sales tax revenue from 2 months prior to collection, i.e., November's collection is based on September sales. Medical Center Hospital Director of Communications, Trevor Tankersley, reported via email that the Ector County Hospital District will receive $3,326,675. City approves water treatment plant rehab bid. During Tuesday's meeting, the Odessa City Council approved 6-0 to award a bid for $95 million for water treatment plant rehabilitation and miscellaneous upgrades projects. District 2 Councilman Steve Thompson motioned for the bid to be awarded, while District 4 Councilman Tom Sprawls seconded the motion. District 3 Councilwoman Detra White wasn't present during Tuesday's meeting. The company awarded the bid is Garney Companies Incorporated. There will also be an agreement with Corolo Engineers Incorporated for project management during and post-construction phase services. Odessa Public Works Director Thomas Kerr broke down the bid into 3 points that total $95 million. Kerr said the bid to Garney Companies Incorporated is for $71,553,712.64, while Corolo Engineers Incorporated will receive $9,437,000 and $14,009,287,036 for the 19% contingency on the project. The project is budgeted for $95 million to be paid with certificates of obligation, which the City Council approved 6-1 on August 3rd. Though there is a 19% contingency, the change orders will be vetted by Corolo Engineers Incorporated, along with the city about additional expenditures. Kerr discussed how change orders are addressed. Change ordering will occur if the contractor runs into something that doesn't fit with what was expected at all, Kerr said. Once you start going behind walls or you get into areas that you weren't physically able to see before you started doing work, you may experience something that you didn't know that was there. The contractor will turn in a request for adjustment if it's needed. It may be a time adjustment or it may be a monetary adjustment. It could be either one. Carollo will review those to see if they were things that the contractor should have expected or not. Based on their review as well as ours, if it was deemed that it was something that couldn't have been known, it's something they could be compensated for then. Those changes will be passed on for execution by the city to make those changes. Since the water treatment plant has been approved and the bid has been awarded, Kerr said the next step is to get the contracts executed. A notice of award is issued so contracts can be solidified with subcontractors and suppliers. We will have a pre-construction meeting, and in that meeting, we will all get settled on who is communicating with who, Kerr said. That gets the start date on construction, and the construction time clock starts to work. Kerr said during the meeting that he expects construction to begin in January and pick up speed in February. In addition to the water treatment plant, rehabilitation and miscellaneous upgrades projects, the city council also approved 6-0 to rebuild a Bob Darrington Water Reclamation Facility mechanical bar screen for $141,817. Kerr explained once the parts arrive, the repair will take between 4 to 6 weeks. Those bar screens serve in the front end of the wastewater facility, Kerr said. The wastewater, when it's coming in, will often contain objects, and these bar screens will catch anything from 1/2 inch in size and keep it from going on into the plant. Boyfriend and girlfriend charged with assaulting each other. A 34-year-old woman and her 29-year-old boyfriend were each arrested after they reportedly assaulted each other. Robin Lee Nichols, 34, was charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, family violence, a second-degree felony. Joshua Lee Stevens, 29, was charged with assault, family violence, a Class C misdemeanor. The reported assault happened around 11:48 p.m. November 8th in the 800 block of Seminole Street. An Odessa Police Department probable cause affidavit stated, upon arrival, Officer Caitlin Paredes reportedly heard a loud disturbance and banged on the door quickly. Paredes held the subject inside at gunpoint and ordered the man to the ground. The man was detained and identified as Stevens. Stevens was bleeding from the left hand and was asked where the injury came from, to which he stated that on November 7th, his live-in girlfriend, identified as Nichols, stabbed him in the left hand, causing pain and several cuts, the affidavit stated. During the investigation, officers reportedly saw several cuts, including one on Stevens' left middle finger that was severe enough that medics advised that he would need stitches. Stevens declined further medical treatment. Officers made contact with Nichols, and she was uncooperative with the investigation, the affidavit stated. Officers were unable to get further information from Nichols. Officers reportedly spoke to a witness at the scene, identified as Ashley Skinner, who stated that around 11:45 p.m. November 7th, that Nichols told Stevens, "Don't walk up on me," and swung a knife at him, causing cuts on his left hand. Skinner also witnessed the two assaulting one another as Nichols and Stevens were charged, arrested, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. Nichols has one bond totaling $25,000 and was still in custody as of Wednesday afternoon, jail records show. Stevens had one bond totaling $386, and he posted bail on November 9th. Governor Greg Abbott forms Concert Safety Task Force. Governor Greg Abbott announced Wednesday the formation of the Texas Task Force on Concert Safety, in the wake of the tragedy at Astroworld Festival in Houston that left at least 8 concert goers dead and injured hundreds of others, a press release detailed. The task force will reportedly be led by Texas Music Office Director Brendan Anthony and will consist of safety experts, law enforcement, firefighters, state agencies, music industry leaders, and others. The task force will hold several roundtable discussions to analyze concert safety and develop ways to enhance security at live music events in Texas, the press release stated. Following these meetings, the task force will produce a report of recommendations and strategies to ensure concert safety and protect concert goers. Live music is a source of joy, entertainment, and community for so many Texans, and the last thing concert goers should have to worry about is their safety and security, Abbott stated in the press release. To ensure that the tragedy that occurred at the Astroworld Festival never happens again, I am forming the Texas Task Force on Concert Safety. From crowd control strategies to security measures to addressing controlled substances, this task force will develop meaningful solutions that will keep Texans safe while maximizing the joy of live music events. I thank the members of this task force for coming together to work on this important issue. In addition to music industry representatives to be announced in the coming days, the task force consists of representatives from the following organizations: the Texas Music Office, Combined Law Enforcement Associations of Texas, Sheriff's Association of Texas, Texas Department of Public Safety, Texas Municipal Police Association, Texas Police Chiefs Association, Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission, Texas State Association of Firefighters.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.